This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
And good morning, magicians. Listening to the Magic Word Podcast. Scott Wells again. And we are in the hotel in the dealer's room right now, and it is all a buzz. It's just open at 9 o'clock. We're going to be getting first activity session starting at 11. But prior to that, we have a few people we're going to chat with here at the dealer's room as we're kind of starting to take money out of our pockets and exchange cash. And so I've got with me Steve Trott, who has never seen the Esther's Follies. Hi there, Steve. Good morning.
Good morning, Scott. And thank you very much for saying hello this morning. I'm hailing over to the meeting from Bermuda, and I very much enjoyed Esther's Follies. Great variety show. Harkens back to some of the greats, and it's fantastic to see Ray in his own element getting to perform with his cast. Right. So I thank Bill Smith for the meeting, and Ray Anderson and all his cast for hosting a wonderful evening for us all last night.
And had barbecue and everything.
Oh, yeah, fantastic food, yeah. The great part was that they had us lined up for the bar and the barbecue at the beginning, and, of course, they helped us develop our appetite the entire time with the great barbecue scent wafting across. A very, very good, warm Texas welcome for the first
evening of the
convention.
It was a nice marketing technique, I think, also, because you had to walk by the bar, first of all, while you're waiting in line. By the time that you got to the barbecue, I need another beer.
Yeah, but you got to walk past it twice.
Yeah.
Even better, you know?
That's true. We did.
You're both rounds on the way around. Yes. Both halves, right?
So that was your first show. I'm glad you liked it. That was fun.
Yeah, no, it was fantastic.
What are you looking forward to at this convention, and why are you attending this?
Well, I mean, Esther's was one of the highlights, and definitely what drew me to Austin. But I'm also really looking forward to Nick Lewin's talk, because I spent some time over in England. About the same time, Nick was schlepping all of Ken Brook's stuff around.
Yeah.
So it's going to be nice to catch up on that leg as well. Yeah, it's amazing. You can come to a meeting in the U.S., still get flavors from England and all over the world.
Yeah.
And that's the wonderful thing about magic. It's an international, welcoming family, and it's been a part of my life forever.
That's great.
A wonderful part. Every time you come into a new town, wherever you're going, you know nobody, but you have an immediate family with the magic community.
Have a connection. What a testimonial. Wow. Yep. You've encapsulated the last 11 years of the Magic Word Podcast right down, because that's what this is all about.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've latched onto you for the same reason.
Well,
thank you very much, Scott.
That was Steve Trott.
Enjoy the meeting, and enjoy the company of everyone else.
Thank you.
Yep.
Scotty out. And so, speaking of Esther's Follies and Ray Anderson, we've got the man himself right here. Hey, Ray.
Hey, how's it going?
Or the amazing Frank.
Yes, so. Both.
You all rolled into one.
That's right.
So this had to be a super experience for you, actually, for the first time doing it for, really, you've done it for your peers, but this is exclusively your peers.
It is. We've done a few shows where it was just magicians, like for the Texas Association of Magicians. Right. We ran everybody through the show, but I have to say that this group was a little more intimidating with so many heavy hitters in the audience. So, but we still had a great time, and I think the cast enjoyed seeing me squirm a little bit.
Well, the way you personalize this by having certain things, obviously you do these all the time for other corporations when they're going to be having their CEOs and news pictures and whatnot and everything.
Right.
But aside from that, because of your relationship to magic and magicians, the way that you had woven this into all this and the stories you told and things, it was just it was hilarious and just spot on and everything. And
oh, I appreciate that.
I'm sure you might have had a little bit of nerves, and so, which is something I'm always curious about, and I ask people from time to time. I mean, I know Johnny Carson, I'd heard, was nervous before he would go on for a show. Were you just a little bit still, and even last night?
Not really. I mean, part of the thing about working at Esther's, though, is it's like walking out into your living room to do a show. So you're as comfortable as you're ever going to be when you're at your... It's like the home court advantage, I think.
Good point.
So, you know, even though you're excited, you're not necessarily nervous, but excited to show everything. And you do hope that everybody enjoys the show and that sort of thing. But I will say with the heavy hitters that were in the audience that night, all together. That's happened once before. Richard Garriott used to do a huge party once a year here in Austin, and he would bring you know, all of the best magicians really in the world together to entertain at this party. And he brought them all to my show on a Friday night before they did their big party on a Saturday.
Max Maven and everybody would come in.
Oh, yeah. Jeff McBride. So many of those people, that was their first time for seeing our show. Now, this goes back maybe almost 20 years, I think, a long time ago. But that was my first taste of having magic luminaries in the crowd. So that was really exciting, but a little nerve-wracking.
But I think it's a good thing to have a little bit of nervousness because it puts you on the top of your game. I mean, if you just go out, you're going to be mailing it in because this way you're kind of on your toes as opposed to being back on your heels.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you have that little extra kick of energy that you might not have if you're into your third show of the week for a lay crowd.
Now, I know, of course, the rest of the crew, the cast, does different things that are topical or whatever's in the news that week, and then also a few of the favorites. But one of the favorites that I've always enjoyed, and I'm sorry they didn't do last night, was Sam I Am, Dr. Seuss thing. I always looking forward to that. I was telling Gabe Blackstone, hey, I hope they do this one. It's going to be great.
Right. Yeah, no, we didn't put Sam I Am in. Actually, we haven't had Sam I Am for quite a while.
Okay, well, it's been a while since I guess I was here last.
But it comes and goes, just like all of them do.
Well, sure.
But usually it has to be worked up again once you take it out for an extended period of time. And
it's not like riding a bike.
Right. We just decided to run the show the way it was, or is right now. Because at first we thought, well, should we put in more magic? Should we take out more localized humor and do something else? And we thought, no, you know, they might enjoy just seeing the show exactly as it runs normally for a regular crowd. I know if I was going to go to a show like that, you know, at a magic convention, that I might enjoy seeing that. It's like, well, why have they been here for 45 years?
Yeah,
exactly. So they, you know, plus most of these guys have experience with performing. So they can look past, you know, the fact that they might not know, you know, some particular subject that's localized,
right,
but still appreciate the crafting of the joke and what it's all about.
Yeah, the crafting is all about. That's right. Mm-hmm. And one of the most exciting things, I think, is the fact we're having it here then Ray in Austin, because you, as the professional you are staying here, don't go to conventions. Magic Live is the only one you go to because, really, it's kind of Sunday through Wednesday when you're not
working.
Right,
it's the only time.
This is the only convention. I mean, we have come to you. We've created a convention around you.
Right.
Even the poster and everything is Ray Henderson in Master's Folly. So, you know, it's a great honor, I would think.
It is. And, you know, we felt a little bit needing to, you know, up our game also because last year's convention for this group was so amazing. You all got to go to the Copperfield Museum. And I thought, well, gosh, how do you top that? So we thought, we'll just do our best and hope everybody has a good time. Right. We'll throw barbecue at them and do a couple of dick jokes.
Yeah. And it all worked out fine.
Oh, thanks.
It was great. Good job. Awful. It's always good to see you.
You
and
too.
I'm glad I live as close as I do, so I do get to see you from time to time.
Well, it's always
get
a pleasure.
Together.
We've probably known each other, at least 35 years?
Yeah, because you've been with Esther's almost
39. It'll be 39 for me.
For you.
45 for Esther's.
You said, now, I remember when I talked to you before, you said there was a possibility that Shannon and her husband may be selling this, but now they've decided you're going to go to 50.
I don't know that, I think after the pandemic, we kind of recharged our batteries. It was a horrific way to, get to that.
Yeah.
But a show like ours that runs as long as it does, you do go through burnout. And unfortunately, for some people, it's an option. If you do burnout, then you can take a little time off. But at Esther's, you just have to push through.
Yeah.
I think we were all feeling a little burned out before the pandemic happened. And being off for a year and a half recharged our batteries so that when we came back, I think especially on our reopening night, our triumphant return, it was so spectacular that we thought, hey, you know, this is all feeling fresh and new to us
and
again.
Fun again.
Yeah.
Well, it was fun before, but.
It was, but, you know, also there's different topics and stuff to write about and you know, it just kind of made sense for us to think, well, maybe, you know, maybe 50 doesn't sound so bad after all. So who knows?
Who
knows what life will
bring. Because you guys still seem so young, and this is keeping you young.
It is, yeah. And I know Shannon, even though Esther's might not go forever, she will. She will never retire. She'll always be doing something. She is the original Energizer Bunny.
Yeah.
She was there this morning when I walked in the door.
Amazing.
I know.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Well, listen, Ray, thanks very much.
Sure.
I know we got a lot of people to visit with over here. Good seeing you. Great
you
job.
Too.
Good seeing you again,
good.
Buddy. For the Magic Word Podcast, that was Ray Anderson. Scotty. We are still walking around in the dealer's room. As I said, there are so many people to visit, and I'm going to, I flattered this lady behind her back. I'm going to her face now, saying this is one of the most beautiful women I know in the world. She has timeless beauty like Sophia Loren. I mean, it is someone that I admire, not just for your beauty, but also mainly for your intellect and working then with the Magicana up in Canada and the things that you have done, and your father, and was it your grandfather, I think, that had it? What was that? It was, okay, so Julie-Ang. Here she is, Julie-Ang.
Hi, Julie. Nice to see you. And I'm so glad to be here. It's my first face-to-face in-person meeting in a long time.
Oh, being in Canada, you couldn't cross the border, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It was a bit of a challenge, and now things are changing in the best way, and yeah. I'm very excited to be here. Because it's finally nice to be able to see people, talk to people, but to reconnect, you know, and talk about the things we love so much, like magic history. So, yes, I'm in Canada, happily so.
In Vancouver.
Well, originally I grew up in Victoria.
Victoria.
Yeah, Vancouver Island. And that's where we talked about my dad and his magic shop.
Right.
Tony's Trick and Joke Shop on Broughton Street. And yeah. my mom ran that for 20 plus years. And eventually Murray Hatfield bought it. You know, so it had this really fun tradition.
Right.
But again, you know, shops, you know, brick and mortar stores we've talked about, it's a different world now. And so when you come to a dealer's room like here, you see product out there, you hear, we were talking the woes of book publishing. I mean, it's nice to have physical things in our hand again to look at as well.
That's true, because everything normally, well, is online right now.
Yes.
And all of the brick and mortars have gone to online shopping. Anybody can open up an online shop basically and sell out of their garage or basement.
Sure, and it's about the service and knowledge that comes with it. You know, that's the thing that
exactly.
I found really interesting
yeah.
when we were, I have these really fun exchanges on Thanks to Magicana. We bump into all kinds of people who just trip across our website. Mm-hmm. And I had a long exchange with a person about cups and balls.
Yeah.
And I felt like I was behind the counter again. This is all by email. I'm not selling anything, but I'm singing the praises of this and don't forget about that. And it was fun to be able to impart sharing and spreading information that's to the right level of this person's skill, because this person self-professed. He said, well, I'm very new at this, I'm brand new, but he wanted to work on something, and it was complex. I warned him, I said, you really want to start with the cups and balls?
Well, that's what I loved about, for an example, when in H&R Magic Shop was in Houston, and I would go up there, and Dick Hatch would say, Scott, this book I think is for you. This has to do with stand-up comedy, or this has something. It's like they make recommendations, and so a good dealer knows his customers also.
Yes, because you've formed a relationship. Right. You have formed friendships. They know what your buying habits are. We don't need an algorithm to tell us.
Good point.
And it is interesting.
You have a human intellectual algorithm. You don't need to have one.
You really,
interesting.
You see Scott coming in, oh, this book just came in. I've earmarked it for you, you know, and it's saved. I mean, that's an important part of, I think, part of the social aspect of it, but also the mentorship, if I dare say. You know, you start to help young people or new people or people who are just getting started into it, brand new enthusiasts. You help direct their readings because you want them to enjoy what they're doing or buying, you know. They want them to use what they have, not just to see how much you can perhaps put in their sack.
get out of there. That's right. It's not like you're going to a retail shop in a shopping mall where people are trying to sell you stuff all the time.
Yeah,
right, exactly.
I mean, this is a part of a service, and I think that it's interesting because I go to a convention and you see people getting together. You see them showing things. Some gentleman is bringing over to show the young lady this. You know, it's nice to see these. Hey, this is the thing I was telling you about. Mm-hmm. That is a rare. Kind of in exchange now.
Anymore it is.
Yeah, it seems
to be the case.
Yeah.
So tell me more about Magicana and how people can access that and what they actually do.
Well, Magicana is multifaceted, as we've always discussed, and it's easy
to
find
us.
Yes, David Benn, my colleague. David remains as the artistic director. So he helps direct programming and ideas. He's the idea guy.
Yeah.
And my job is the executive director, so I execute those ideas. Mm-hmm. And we have a very fun way of presenting, you know, various programs. So we have presentations. So we haven't been able to produce anything in a long time. But so we've turned to online. And this is where I think we've shifted our focus a little bit by moving toward online exhibitions, which are all free. So people can, this is how that gentleman found us. He just trip across an exhibition. He found our cup and ball exhibition. And it's not meant to be a deep dive into a lot of areas. It's more to invite viewers or visitors to just come and check it out. learn a little bit more. Then if you do have a strong interest, well, maybe then we can help you, or other areas, like other specialists can help you dive deeper and deeper. But that's how you make, I think, a nice opening to sharing wonder, because the public doesn't always know what magic is. And I have learned that the history is such a strong part of that, because there's a human being behind that story.
We can't go forward unless we look back, I think.
I think
understand where we came from.
Exactly. This is exactly what we talked about in a conversation last night. You know, this is how so many people get into it. Did you know? And all of a sudden, your eyes pop open, yeah, and you want to know more.
It's deep into the story. It's like, let me dig deeper. You know, it's just a natural curiosity of magicians in particular.
Yeah. Well, this is one of the neat things that we have found at Magicana, is that we acquired a huge film collection and we amalgamated that with our existing media collection. So the screening room at our site, again, all for free, exhibits a lot of video. And the video may seem, like, so films from the early, well, we can go back to the early 20s. They're smaller snippet films. But we're looking to also bring more contemporary voices to, or screens to our array. Mm-hmm. And that gives people a chance to kind of go through and check out new things, learn about how other magicians did it in the past, because all of a sudden, you know, the 80s was not last decade anymore.
Yeah, that's right.
And
we move forward.
And we look at sort of contemporary magicians from a larger period of time. It gives us a sense of, like, what has been done? What was the style? What can we learn from all of that? Because there is an art to presenting, and it does shift and evolve as culture allows us and dictates. However, there's also a foundational form of presentation. We watched a great show at Esther Follies last night,
right,
which was hilarious and contemporary and very, very to the moment.
Yet,
the magic is so classic and so precisely well done. You don't learn that off of YouTube, you know. So this is where the screening room gives a sense of history, a sense of a snapshot in time, but of moving pictures. So we're slowly adding more and more to all of that, and soon, I keep saying this, soon we'll have more.
And that's Magicana.
Yeah, magicana.com.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So there's lots there to check out. We have a new project that's coming up called the Rich Cabinet Collection. That's going to be a big part of our publication series. We, of course, produce the Johnny Thompson books as well.
Right.
So we're also very busy in the publishing world, too. So.
And I do want to go back then to Magic Live, because you and Jonathan Levitt just knocked it out of the park as the two best MCs, I think.
Thank
and I
you.
Wish Stan would bring that back. I've talked to Jonathan about
let's
that.
Let's find Stan now.
That's right. And here, hey, Scott, come with me. I want you to say that. Tell him, too. But, you know, I think the two of you, the way that you work back and forth, and then individually when you were talking with people, you both have just wonderful interviewing styles that I would love to emulate. But I assume that there's nothing planned this year that you're going to be involved
in. Well,
doing,
you know, this I'm not involved this year on that level, but you know, that's another great example of evolution and trying to bring in new things, speaking to a specific demographic. And it's really fun because I learned a lot working with the team. I love collaborating, so I think that that's something Stan and his team always do magnificently.
Yes.
So I do encourage your listeners to check that out, because there's always something new. It's always about a surprise, and it's about something, you know.
He always walks the edge, and that's what I love, is because just because it worked last year, I'm not going to try it again to try to build on that. I'm going to just scrap it and start from scratch. It's
yes.
like, what a concept.
It's kind of nuts.
Scary, yeah.
It's very scary. And that's, I mean, I got involved because they wanted to try something new.
Sure.
But we did do that, and I love it. I do love it. And working with someone as generous as Jonathan Levitt is really a treat for me. He's a super collaborator, but he's so organized, so professional, so focused. I love working with... The whole team is like this,
yeah.
mind you. I mean, everybody. And we bring out the best in each other in these very tight timelines. It's very exciting to be a part of that. But I think it has to be fresh and dynamic for something like Magic Live. You expect a lot for it.
Sure.
And yeah, so that's why I have mixed feelings, because I want to go back and do all that too, and I do love it. But I also really admire Stan and his team's adventure to just keep pressing the envelope.
Right. Well, I wanted just to bring that out also for the listening audience, because as you're hearing Julie's voice, you're thinking, wait a minute, I recognize that. And if you go to themagicwordpodcast.com, there you'll see her picture and go, oh yeah, that was her. I know who she is. So anyhow, so good to reconnect here.
Yeah, it is great to reconnect. And it's
after all these years too.
Yeah.
You know, the last couple of years in pandemic. So.
The pandemic has changed a lot, and I've worked online more in an administrative administrative or interviewing kind of front. Mm-hmm. I miss performing a lot. Yes. You know, that's the thing I think we all miss the most, because it's hard to be this close.
And the Zoom's not quite it.
No, for me, I'm a people person. You know, I've grown up on live theater, and I love the Zoom shows I've seen, and I applaud all of these amazing, talented people who can set up these studios and make it look so absolutely professional. We do the Magic Canada does the Alan Slade Awards.
That's right.
And we had to really look at the way the pandemic affected magic, and that was look at how that creativity.
It was interesting because David Sandy and Lance Rich had won that award because they did something during pandemic that really took us to a level and kept us connected. You know,
it kept a very important part of our community connected in a social way that was such an important part of when we were in serious lockdown, when people could not really see people safely.
I mean, I was doing a Thursday night Magic and Martini, and I had a lot of people who were coming in also, but for different reasons. I mean, his had an agenda, and they had different rooms, and different people who were coming in. It was really great. Mine's just drinking and talking. You know?
Well, that's fun, too. I like Magic and Martinis, too. However, you're right, because David and Lance went to the trouble to curate every week. What was it, 35 weeks that they did?
Oh, longer than that, by the
way. Yeah. Yeah, well, for our year when we were in complete lockdown, they went every Sunday without fail. It is a mind-blowing experience to think about all that they did and what they continued to share, and they kept this community alive. And I know lots of other conventions did this, but to the range of collecting magicians have so many things that they collect. And it was interesting for all of us who collect all kinds of crazy things or have interests everywhere.
And the fact we got to go into people's individual homes and see those collections that we never would have seen otherwise.
Yes. So, check out Magic Canada's website, because you'll see how a lot of magicians, I don't like to use this word pivot, but they did really 180 on this crazy period that we were living through.
We had to.
Yeah. And I'm very excited to see what this does now to magic and gatherings and
how
will it affect us? So tell your listeners, you know, nominations are closed for this year, but there's always next year.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much, Julie. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Julie Yang. This is Scotty Al.
Thanks.
First session is already completed, and some people are in the dealer's room and kind of walking about, and I wanted to talk with a good friend of mine that I haven't seen in a while, Kevin Oliver. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, Scott. How are you?
I'm nothing less than fantastic, and even better now that I get to see you then as well. Good. Kevin and I had worked together many years ago when I used to live in Dallas, and we've done some things. I was mentioning South Fork Ranch a while ago, because that's where Dallas was. Did they record? Actually, they used that as a studio?
Yeah, that was an outdoor set that they used. I think they recovered, you know, most of the exterior shots were done there, and I think even a lot of the interior stuff, too.
Yeah. But as far as this convention goes, now you have, of course, seen Astor's Follies before, I'm assuming.
Sure, yeah. Okay. I try to come down a couple of times a year. Been back a couple of times since they started up after the pandemic, and, you know, it's just a great Texas tradition.
It is. And so for people who haven't seen that, what would you say? What would be your suggestion or recommendation for people to come and see it?
Absolutely. Come see it. As people here in Austin say, please come to Austin, eat a meal, see a show, and then leave.
I heard just yesterday, what was that? I think Kent Cummins was telling me this, that Austin had grown by about 1 million people, and they did not intend to. They intentionally kept the transportation and the infrastructure tight.
True.
Because they didn't want it to grow, but it did despite itself, and so now they can't catch up.
Yeah, it's a unique place. My daughter's in school here. I used to have an office here. Mm-hmm. You know, I love it. It's a great place. I like where I am in Dallas, but Austin's a fantastic city for lots of things, magic included.
I wouldn't mind coming and living in this general area. I don't like the traffic. I'd like to live in Georgetown or someplace just on this outskirts a little bit.
Well, you know, our friends Brad Henderson and Gary Plants live just north of town, and I'm sure.
Yep, and the Holsteins also just live up
sure.
that way then as well. So, back to the convention over here. So, we had a session today, which we saw Trixie Bond talking about Texas musicians, and one of the friends of yours who had passed was Bob White and Presley Guitar.
Right. Lost both of them recently, and the world is a darker place without them here, and without Bob, it's a quieter place.
That's true. I thought it was always funny, because she referred to him as a grumpy old man, but he... specialize in school shows, kid shows, and I just don't think the two go together. I never, when I heard he did kid shows, I thought, you're kidding me.
Bob in front of a group of children was completely different than Bob at the bar at a magic convention.
Yeah.
I mean, it were like two different Bob Whites. It was almost like the school show magician was a character he was playing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really, it's great to watch him. Those of us that saw him actually go work with kids, and man, he was great with the principals and working the business on the back end, and there were times when Bob used to, the schools would actually collect a dollar from all the kids, and then they would give Bob a grocery sack full of $1 bills at the end of the show. And I spent more than enough time helping Bob sort through and count and band up that money after kids' shows. It's a fun experience.
Have you been to one of these collectors' events before?
This is the first one I've been to.
Mm-hmm. You consider yourself a collector?
Well, I think, sure. You know, I have a lot of old gambling apparatus, crooked and fair. I have a fairly extensive collection of magic, but it's mostly because it's stuff that belonged to friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have some of Lou Zafran's things. I have some of Johnny Brown's things and some of Bob's things. And, you know, that's I'm a collector more of the experience with the people and the importance of the prop than I am the prop itself.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And so how are you enjoying this convention?
Oh, this is great. I think it's got everything I like about a magic convention and none of the stuff I don't like.
Yeah, it is kind of intimate also. There are probably about 150 people or so, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And,
people who are knowledgeable about history.
Yeah. There's, you don't want to, there's people here that are the world expert in fill in the blank, whatever subject it is, whatever magician it is, whatever effect it is. It's
like Chip Romero on Doug Henning, for an example, or something like
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. And the talk we're having about Malini today, I think we're also one of Al Flosso's students is going to talk to us. So that's I'm really looking forward to that.
Right. So it's been a lot of fun. Well, Kevin, good catching up and good to see you, my friend.
You too, Scott. Thanks.
So the Magic Word Podcast. That was Kevin Oliver. Scotty out. We have just finished the final activity for day two, and that wrapped up with the Lance Burton and Fielding West talking about an amazing show that happened back in the 1980s. But I'm here with Steve Beam, and hello, Steve.
Hi. How are you doing, Scott?
I'm fantastic. Do you come very often to the collectors? I don't remember. Were you at Copperfields last year?
Last 5 years, I've been to everything I could go to except, you know, for COVID.
Aside from books, what do you collect?
A little bit of everything. I collect card boxes, coin droppers, posters, books, and book plates.
Okay.
And a few other smaller things.
How many book plates? I've got some book plates also.
Well, I just bought a set in a recent auction. Wow. I think I'm around 500.
Okay.
And in fact, during our little conversation, you were going to send me your book plates. Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up so I didn't have to, though.
I knew there was something I owed you.
There you go. That's it.
Aside from that $5. So what is it about this convention so far that that's impressed you?
What's not to love? I mean, their selection of speakers has been terrific. I thought Trixie Bond did an incredible job talking about the history of magicians in Texas. And since I graduated from high school in Texas, a lot of my friends were up there, and they were all people who had passed.
Yeah.
And it was just great. That's been, 40 years ago, and it was great to see, you know, people like Ramon Galindo,
right.
Fred Donaldson, Judy Donaldson. It just, to me, getting to see them again and hear about them, you know, I live in a different part of the country and haven't lived here in that many years, so it's good to kind of flashback.
And they're all people that whose lives had intersected with hers, who influenced her in some way or another.
Yes, and it was fascinating. She had great stories. I hope that ends up being a book. Tonight.
She's planning on that, actually.
Is she? That's terrific. It needs to be.
Well, when she was putting that together, I mean, this is, when I was working with her, it was probably about an hour and a half to 2 hour presentation. And she's got all these other stories that keep coming in. And I kept saying, you got to cut. Because, first of all, he said, you got to do 30 minutes. And then he said, okay, I'll give you 40. Okay, maybe 45. And so I put the slides together. So it just, I mean, she's got a ton more things to put together, and I hope she does put this into a book. And she said she's going to.
I told her right afterward to do it, so I'm going to take credit for it. The fact that you told her weeks and months ago, that's different. But also, look at the conversation tonight. We had Lance and Fielding up there doing a terrific job and talking about a special moment in history, a show I would have loved to have seen.
Wouldn't we all?
Live, but, you know, seeing it on video, next best thing. I thought Roger talking about Al Flosso today. Roger Dreyer was incredible. It just, you know, in the act he did. And he tipped us to a couple of things before the act, which was great to watch him then do it, because I'm not sure I would have ever figured there were only 11 coins involved, because he produced what seemed like 150. Yeah.
Yeah. And the way of him retrieving those coins from the bucket in his hand were amazing.
Yeah.
That was good.
And the load with the wand, well, also good. And again, we got tipped on the front end because I wouldn't have gotten. In fact, I think I've seen that clip a couple of times before and never had it.
Yeah.
I think it is, yes.
Yeah, I've seen that then as well. Speaking of the show then this evening, I don't want to just glaze over that because that was an amazing thing. It was raising funds for Africa back when they were doing things for, this was again like 86, I think it was, with hosted by Harry Anderson. It had Doug Henning, Siegfried and Roy, Fielding West, Lance Burton, Mark Wilson, Harry Blackstone Jr., and Jeff McBride,
Max Maven.
What a show. I know. It would have been amazing to have seen something like that.
I would have been happy with half of those.
Yeah.
So to get them all, really quite impressive. I mean, really, those were the names in Magic at the time that we were all reading about every month in the magazines. To see it live just would have been, I think, something really special.
So a question to you, since you're from North Carolina, have you ever been to Esther's Follies before last night?
I have not.
And?
I thought it was terrific. I really did. I thought, it amazed me that the magic was as good as it was.
Yeah.
I just think he did a terrific job, and he was one of the speakers. He was interviewed by Stan today. But, what a great way to start a convention. They really do a tremendous job at these expos.
Well, that wasn't just the start, actually. We went over to the Ransom Center to see
the
Houdini thing.
Oh, absolutely. In the Ransom Center, that's something that if any people don't know about it, they need to find out about it. Because I can tell you, I'm going to come back here. I'm going to make a special trip. I talked to the lady about, you know, how many days can I be here? What can I do? Are they actually going to let me touch the object? And, in fact, I mean, I said, are we going to wear gloves or what? And she said, well, some of the really fragile stuff is in Mylar, but we give it to you, and you can turn the pages of the letters and stuff. And then we prefer clean hands to gloves in most cases.
Really?
Yeah, because apparently that's of less damage. You overhandle it if you have the gloves on, trying to separate pages.
Sure.
So things like that. I got a whole little session, talked to her for about 4 or 5 minutes on what it would take to come back, and I'm coming back.
I heard a story many years ago about Ab Dixon, who had found a ticket in there that was for a train station depot locker in London or something. This is a story. And supposedly he had absconded with that ticket, went back, and he found one of Harry Houdini's milk cans that he had left there.
Right.
That's all BS. But man, it made for a great story.
Well, I'm picturing Ab hauling the thing out, you know?
It's all believable.
Yeah, I know.
And so I asked Dr. Cleary about that. He said, I've heard that, and that's not true.
Well, that's a shame. That's a shame. Well, that wouldn't have passed muster at this history conference. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
Well, it was kind of like whenever that Ray was performing last evening and he had this very serious thing. He was talking about Carter the Great, George, I mean.
Right.
And then he said, and this is the first audience.
Right, that would know that it wasn't BS.
Yeah.
I mean, know that it was BS, excuse me.
Knows it was
BS. And by the way, I didn't say his name earlier. Ray Anderson was the guy at Esther Follies. Terrific job.
I love the guy.
Yeah, incredible and fast mover.
And we had barbecue, too. Texas barbecue.
Doesn't get much better than that. Yeah.
And how was your Texas beer? When we last night,
Shiner Box. Yeah. In fact, we came back to the hotel. I had another one. So, yes.
There you go.
You did good.
Well, thank you very much.
You did good.
Well, it's always good seeing you, Steve. I'm glad you came out. I'm looking forward to seeing you again. In a couple of weeks, we're going to be at the online 4F convention.
Oh, that's right. Except I think I'm going to be on vacation. So
where
I may miss the mountains of North Carolina, taking the family.
Mm-hmm.
But
but
if I can squeeze it in, I think that's the travel day for us. But if I can squeeze
it in,
Saturday,
I will. It's Saturday, isn't it? Or something?
Yeah, and that's
28th or 9th or whatever.
I think if I remember
30th.
My days, 30th is
30th,
the day I'm
right.
going. Yeah.
Okay, I think you may miss it then. We'll miss
it. I'll probably miss it.
I'll talk about you.
Well, good enough.
So the Magic
but I will be there next year when we're doing it live again.
I'm so looking forward, as is everyone, of getting back in the real world again with 4F. I mean, it's the real 50th.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. and it's, I mean, it's almost tragedy Obi couldn't be there for it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, 50 years, it's quite a hallmark for everybody, I think, who attends regularly.
Right.
And, you know, and it really is. It's more than just a group of guys getting together. It's been a family for many of us.
Now, you were involved. Are you on the board, actually?
I am now.
Okay, do you know who or what is going to be happening or who's going to take? Is it Joan Caesar and Glenn Brown or who's
taking
over?
Yes, yes, okay. The two of them. And I think the way it's been discussed lately is there'll be two basically co-executive directors, I think, is the way they're going to run that. And, you know, and why not? You know, they pretty much have jumped in and kept the thing going.
Sure.
They've done a lot of the work. They've done the legwork. Obi was, in effect, training them on, you know, what he did so that they would know what to do.
He was about to pass the baton to him anyhow.
Exactly, exactly. And so, I mean, for goodness sakes, he'd been to 49 of them, you know, and the only other one who comes close is Tom Craven, who's been to 49.
He's the only one.
Yeah, well, he is now the only one.
Last standing.
And I hope he hope he's at the 50th.
Yeah.
If not, we'll do something special for both of them.
Exactly. Well, Steve, great seeing you. Good. And sorry, I might miss you over there, but I always look forward to seeing you. You're my favorite guys. Well, you're so funny.
Same here. I love to see you because I am one of your favorite guys. So, you know, you tell me that.
No, so, Magic Word Podcast, kidding. You're hysterical. Yes, isn't that what I'm supposed to say?
Yeah, exactly.
You told me years ago when I published that in Magic.
I did. And I appreciate
that. And I love you, man.
I do, too.
Magic Word has Steve Beam. Scotty, yeah. So now we are going to talk with one of the people who was involved in this evening's activity, and that's my buddy and yours, Mr. Fielding West. Hey, Fielding.
Hey, Scotty. How you doing, buddy?
I'm fantastic, and I think the presentation you guys gave was fantastic. And what an event that was. 1986, was it?
No, it was March of 85 in Las Vegas at the Tropicana Hotel and Casino. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if you noticed, but I got choked up.
You did.
Because... I was looking at him and went, that guy's dead.
Was that what was doing it?
That was what was doing it, because one after the other was coming out, and they're no longer with us.
Right.
And finally,
Mark Wilson, Harry Blackstone, Doug Henning.
Harry Anderson, Siegfried and Roy. I mean,
oh my gosh.
When you look at everybody that's not here with us.
I think you, Jeff, and Lance are the only ones who are standing.
That's right.
Yeah, Jeff McBride and Lance Burton.
And Max Maven.
And how you feeling?
I don't know. What have you heard?
But what a fantastic show that was. And that was just a seminal point in time in which I believe that you said raised like $20,000.
$22,000 for USA for Africa. And plus, it was not just raising the money. Well, that was the original intent. But our idea was, how can we get all the top magicians that we had available to us together in one room? We could not have afforded to have paid those guys the money that they were making at the height of their careers.
Right. You're not going to give $20,000 even to Siegfried and Roy come and do that. Just for one group.
That's exactly right.
Blackstone or Henning or coming in.
But how
did that happen? With Lance and you were the two who put those together.
We were sitting on the couch. We were watching USA for Africa singing We Are the World. And he looked at me and I looked at him and I said, you know, if we did, you think we could do that with magic? And I said, oh, yeah. What are you thinking? He says, gives me a piece of paper and a pen. He says, you make a list, I'll make a list.
Your favorite, best magician.
That was it. And so I put them down, and we had the same list, except I did not include myself in the show because I didn't think I was that big a star at that time.
You just wanted to produce it.
I just wanted to be able to say, yeah, I put this thing together. But Lance says, oh, no, you're in the show. Mm-hmm. And that was that. So.
Well, and you provide a lot of comedy relief. I mean, between you and Harry, I think it was very
good. Oh, it was
well,
great.
And Johnny Thompson, I guess, the Thompsonian.
Yeah, of course. All of it was great.
Yeah, it was great. Now, they all had donated their times, but in contacting them, did you, because I assume that you were all friends, did you contact, let's say, Doug Henning directly, or did you have to go through an agent, or Bernie Newman, or, you know, for the Siegfried, or how did that work out?
Lance calls up Doug Henning. He happened to have Doug Henning's phone number.
Okay.
And he said, and Doug wasn't there. So he says, very nervous.
Yeah.
He says, listen, I don't know if you're interested or if available, but we're doing a thing with famous magicians for USA for Africa. And if you think you have any interest in being involved in something like this, please call me back. I left his number. And I don't know if it was an hour or what, but Doug came in, saw that message, said, yeah, put me in.
Just like that.
It was that fast. I called Harry Anderson at home. I said, Harry, I know you got a TV show now. You're a busy guy. Can you do such and such? He says, put me in.
Wow.
I said, would you mind emceeing? He says, that's what I want to do.
Wow.
And you could not have gotten a better MC. Mm-hmm. So,
I think the stories you guys were sharing also about Doug Henning supplemented what Chip Romero was talking about earlier today about Doug's life and what he had done and getting a grant from the Canadian government and going on Broadway, et cetera, and his career and whatnot. But you really... personalized him and talking about how sensitive and caring of a guy he was.
He came to my dressing room, and knowing the controversy of me having this sub-trunk, and everybody saying, we're not having two sub-trunks in the show. And he came down there and he said, I'm going to go on. If I get mine first, Dave Vernon talks about your trunk all the time. He says, personally, I want to see it.
Where did Dave Vernon see you? At the castle, I guess?
Oh, yeah. He used to come in, and there was all this controversy because there's a guy making fun of the sub-trunk, which they all thought was so sacred.
But I thought you did one like with the tiger. He came out there shredded clothes.
What happened was when my wife left the act, I had a brand new outfit.
That was Janice.
No, that was not Janice. That was my first wife. Oh, first wife. That was my first wife in the video there, and her name was Pam. And so at the same moment that she's backing out of the act, and I just spent $1,400 for a brand new costume, specially made for, you know, for that sub-trunk.
Yeah.
And she, we're very high-volume yelling at each other. Lance says, please don't yell. And so all of a sudden he says, hey, there's something on TV. And there was a news flash. One of Siegfried and Roy's animal handlers has been mauled. Hmm. And the light went off in my head, just like that. And I said, I've got it. Go get a job. You don't have to do the act anymore. Mm-hmm. I said, Lance, I need some help. And I ran in and I had a duplicate suit. And we started cutting that baby up. And, within less than 45 minutes, I had the lion roar. We had the tiger trick done in less than an hour.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, this was before or after this show? This one.
Oh, that was after that.
Well, after that.
Yeah.
Okay. Because this one, you popped out and you were in ladies' lingerie.
Right. They called me at that time, Scott, they called me the Rocky Horror Magician.
Rocky Horror Magician.
Yeah.
I could see that.
Because I had black fishnet. I was like, whatever the character was that was in Rocky.
Yeah. Yes.
Frankenfurter or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
Nice doggy.
Oh, thank you.
Sue Holstein going by with her dog.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that was from Lance.
Lance.
Hey. So, okay, so now we get the other part of the team over here then, too. We were just recapping about the show and everything, how that all came together, and you guys kind of sitting around, of course.
Oh, yeah.
But that was just a great idea. And who did you contact? We were talking about how you actually started, after you had the names. Did you go through agents, or did you just call, Bernie
Newman? No, we just called people up. I called Jeff McBride up, and I think I contacted Harry Blackstone.
Doug Henning?
Doug Henning was the one that I didn't really know Doug that well.
But I'd
met him
number.
A few times. I got his office number.
Oh, okay.
I called the office.
This was before cell phones.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I called the office and I spoke to his assistant or secretary there, and I explained, you know, who I was and what we were putting together, mm-hmm. and what it was for. And Doug called me. I left my number, thinking, okay, I'll never hear back from Doug. You know,
right.
he's very busy. You know, he's touring the world. He's doing all these TV special stuff.
Yeah. Had he done Broadway before or that?
Oh,
at that
yeah,
point?
He had done five,
as
six
after Spellbound
TV specials,
or before Spellbound.
Before Spellbound. Yeah. But he, you know, he was the big star in
1985. Right.
Well, they were all stars. I mean, Harry Anderson had his own night court.
But Doug was the most well-known magician in the world.
That's true.
At
that's
point.
True.
And then about a week later, the phone rings, and it's like 7 in the morning, and I'm dead asleep, and the phone rings, and it's Doug. And he's like, Lance, this is Doug, and I love this idea. You guys are putting the show together, and I'd love to be part of it. It just sounds so wonderful that it's such a great cause, and I want to – and, you know, every one of those acts traveled to Vegas on their own dime, brought their own assistants, paid their own assistants, the close-up
everything.
Guys – and I think the Tropicana provided, you know, hotel rooms for a couple of nights.
Yeah.
But they all paid their own expenses to come out and do that show. And like I say, you know, we raised $20,000 to $25,000.
Which is a lot of money back then.
To donate to the USA for Africa.
Now, the obvious question was the person who was missing, and that was kind of funny gag that Harry used as a six finger when he's naming people. He said, David Copperfield, oh, he's not here, and he pulled off his finger. Now, David was had something, he would have been there, but what was going on?
I don't remember. He had some a previous engagement
that he couldn't
get out of.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Because he would have been obviously the one who would have been overlooked of the superstars at the time, you know.
Yes, sure. And
he was playing for the president of the United States at that time, who was Ronald Reagan. and he was at the Ford Theater.
Oh, yeah.
In Washington,
D.C. Hard to get out of that.
It's hard to get out of that gig, nor do you want to get out of that gig. Right. And also, he had some, according to his people, he had some technical issues with his props that were on wheels because the Ford Theater stage is raked. So they had to raise the front wheel so the stuff wouldn't roll off the stage.
But when you talked to Siegfried and Roy, my question I was asking there was just about what they did as far as magic. And you said, no, they just sang a number. And was it because they didn't have something on them, or they felt like they needed to have bigger props?
That I don't know.
They had just come from a show.
Had just come from a show.
But so they brought a tiger with them.
Yeah, but, you know, their stuff is huge.
Well, good point.
It's not like they're going to...
And they'd already done a dove act. I know Siegfried did a dove act.
And I guarantee you they weren't going to do the sub trunk.
But I don't think Siegfried he wasn't doing the birds anymore at this point.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Yeah, at the Frontier. They did the birds at the Lido.
Right.
But when they moved to the Frontier...
Did Siegfried do a manipulation act? I don't remember him doing billiard balls or cards or anything.
When he was younger, he did
on
birds.
The ship?
On the ship. He did... I saw him. I mean, I hung out with him, and I saw him do. We had a deck of cards. He was doing split fans.
Wow. Right.
Yeah, he was very good. You know, he was. It was not just capable of doing the illusions. He was quite good at sleight of hand.
Well, it was a well-rounded show, including Max Maven, and I know his part was cut short because in metalism, he really got to get into it. So because of time.
Basically, Max came out and did his opening monologue and jokes, mm-hmm. and then just went into his closer,
right?
Which was like a 10-minute routine,
right?
But for the purposes of tonight, you know, we tried to, because there's so many acts, we tried to keep it tight enough. Because it was a long show.
I understand that. You said it was like 2.5, almost 3 hours?
Yeah.
And no
yeah.
intermission, I assume?
No, it was straight through.
Wow. Did you expect it to be that long? Because you gave everybody like three things to do, basically.
Well, yeah, it's always longer than you think it's going to be.
Isn't that the truth?
You know, you always, if you plan out a show and you look at it on paper, you're going, okay, we're supposed to do an hour and a half, but we've only got an hour's worth of material here. You know, then you always want to add an act or a routine. And then that'll do it. And then you go 2 hours.
Yeah. Well, it was great. And I thank you guys very much. That was a wonderful, presentation that you put on then and talking about that. And thanks for putting that together and making a stellar moment in history in magic. It's never been repeated.
It's never been repeated. And I'll tell you what, it's probably one of the stellar accomplishments in my career that I was involved with this project.
Right. I love also, and I'll close with this, of what you had said then, Lance, is you were hoping at some point you would like to think there's someone going to come to you and say, I was in Africa whenever they brought some food on this truck or something. Yeah. And you don't know whose lives you're touching. Any of us as magicians, whose lives, whatever we're doing.
It was really a keystone moment in popular culture when artists... You know, banded together from the rock and roll and the singers to the magicians, comics were doing.
Yeah, Comics Relief, that's right.
We're doing things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was just a wonderful thing to be part of. And I think the lesson is that you try to do something kind for someone.
I love that. Yeah. That's right. Well, thank you guys for being kind, talking to me for just a minute about that.
You got it. Thank you, Scott.
You bet. For the Magic Word Podcast, that's Fielding West and Lance Burton. Scotty out. Day two here in Austin. It is appropriate that we talk with a person who is an Austinite, actually Pflugervillian, I guess.
I say Pflugger Rock.
Pflugger Rock.
Well, I'm in the city of Pflugerville, but my mailing address is Round Rock, which means I haven't had warm Chinese food since I moved in.
And because we are at the Magic Collectors Expo, this is a gentleman who is a collector and was a curator for Richard Garriott's collection for a long time. Please welcome Brad Henderson. Hey, Brad.
Hi, Scott.
Hello. Good to always have you.
What a great opening. It can only go up from here.
Thank you. That's the way I always feel. I have a weak finish, and then it goes down from there. That's right.
That's what she said.
So we're obviously at the bar. You have been to collectors before and everything, and it just so happened to be in your town over here. Now, you're going to be performing tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night, correct.
Okay.
I hope I don't suck.
Well, what are you planning on doing? Are you doing one or two things, or how many?
I'm doing one thing.
Is it one of these collector items that's something that the magicians who are collectors will appreciate? Are you bringing something for your collection or what?
No, not at all.
What are you doing?
So, well, you know, I think the collectors will appreciate because of the context and framing. of the routine. And, well, I mean, I'll tell you what it is. I mean, I don't think it'll be a spoiler. We're not going to ruin it from everybody. I don't know when. Well, this won't get posted before.
No,
the
it'll
event.
Be posted tonight.
All right. But it'll nobody here is going to listen to it.
No.
Because nobody really listens
they
to
really
this,
don't.
Do they?
No.
That's the only reason I agree to do it. It's because if I say something really dumb, I know anything? Nobody's ever going to hear it.
Exactly.
No, so I love magic. I love magic of all types. And I have a collection that kind of started when I first started doing magic. I've always been a collector ever since I was a young kid. When I was 4, 5, 6 years old, I started collecting Disney records. And then it was board games. And when I got to magic, seriously, when I was 10, I mean, I love nothing more than arranging all the props on the shelves and making things pretty like the magic shops that I had, you know, got to go to when I was young. And there was a piece that I got when I was 10 years old, and I did it for many years as kids show stuff, and, you know, all the way through high school. And, you know, at some point you kind of grow up, and you're like, you know, I can't do these same tricks. I mean, because I've been doing this since I was 10. This is obviously a kids show trick. So I retired this piece, and I put it on a shelf, and people would come over, and they'd go, "What does that do?" And I'd pick it up and I'd give it a quick demonstration. They go, "That's the greatest thing I've ever seen." And then the next person would come to the house. They go, "What does that do?" I'd pick it up and I just barely a demonstration.
Right.
"That's the greatest thing I've ever seen." How many times did I need to hear this before I realized that there is something inherently wonderful about what this particular thing does? But the problem with it is every magician knew it. And at that point, I didn't want to do something that was so easily dismissed. And I thought to myself, I'm a kind of smart magician. I know a lot of things a lot of people don't know. What if I took what I knew about this type of magic and applied it to this very simple, classic children's trick? And then I thought, well, isn't that wonderful that you're going to be doing this really high-techy kind of sleight of hand, very, you know, sophisticated, you know, card work that not a lot of people know exists, with this juxtaposition with a kind of a hoary classic trick? Shouldn't that suggest a presentation that's also equally shocking in its juxtaposition? So I will be presenting a culmination and the long line of magically trained animals. You're familiar with Munito, the dog with the brain of a human, a canine so clever he could answer the most obscure of trivia questions by picking up cards with the correct answer. Or Ferdinand Genius Pig, a porcine oddity so wise he could solve the most complex mathematical equations with a combination. I am proud tomorrow to present the culmination on a long line of these animals.
Wow.
An animal of which I'm doubly proud, because not only did I train her, but I raised her myself.
How old is she?
Well, you know, she and I have been working together since I was 10 years old. And so now this will mark our 42nd year together, maybe. I mean, she took a little retirement for a while before I came back to our relationship and appreciated her for the genius that she potentially possessed. But I will tell you, I've toured with her for over 25 years. And when I go to these venues, they make T-shirts with her name and her picture on it. And when I show up, the first question they ask is Bessie with you? And when she's not there, they're very upset. She's really wonderful. I took her to the Magic Castle a few years ago, and she had her Magic Castle debut, and really did a great job, and it's great working with her. I mean, she's a little finicky. She always has very copious notes at the end of the performance that she goes over with me, but I do that with every other magician I've seen, so it's only fair. She's very excited about her chance on stage, and we have actually been rehearsing. You know, we've taken this very seriously, and she's had these ideas for, like, you know, this is a great idea, but there's so many more clever ideas that we've come up with over the years that we've never worked into the act.
Yeah.
And she insisted that this was the audience that we were going to finally sit down, regroup, and take all of those experiences And so we did a bit of a rewrite, a little flush out. Some of the techniques have changed now that she's matured and more skilled. And she really believes that there's a very good chance that not only will the audience be genuinely entertained, which is, of course, important, engaged, which is critical, but perhaps even fooled.
So you've whetted my appetite.
Yeah, well.
Whetted my interest, I should say.
Yes, well, you know, hopefully you're not too hungry around her, because I'd hate to see her on a plate.
Then you'd have to find another one.
Impossible.
There's only one, Bessie.
There's only one Bessie. And she's been with me since I was 10 years old.
Wow. Well.
And you know, it's really kind of wonderful. The fact that, I mean, I know it sounds weird. I mean, but I'm a magician, so of course it's weird. You know, but don't we kind of love our props and have relationships with them and shed a tear when they chip or they break?
Yeah.
You know, this is, this. She and I started out together. And the fact now I can bring her with some of the greatest magical minds and collectors in the world, and potentially, they will get to see her in all of her glory and all the hard work that she's and I, I'll take a little credit, that she and I have put into it. I mean, I'm genuinely excited, and when I say this, I mean it sincerely. I hope I don't suck.
Is she related by chance to another animal named Joanne?
Joanne is a relative, also a great uncle named Otto. Yeah.
Okay. You have.
Let's leave it.
Leave
there.
It at that.
I think. Let's leave it at that.
I think we should. So the fact we are holding the convention in Austin, I think, is awesome, because a lot of people who are coming in for the first time and seeing and experiencing Austin, number one, but also Ray Anderson. And last year we were in Vegas and got to see Copperfield's collection.
I was going to invite everybody to come see my collection this year, and we were going to call it The Great Disappointing.
Disappointing.
I mean, after that, right?
Well, then they can go see Kent Cummins' collection in his museum at the fantastic Magic Center.
Yes.
Of a lot of stuff that he has then as well. It's interesting. And then, of course, over in Magic, the guy goes... Johnny Magic. He's got a collection and a place as well. So there is really a lot of interesting
A lot of magic here. Yeah.
If people would kind of start to seek this out within this area. So it's
right.
A good place.
And we're all getting older, so get those U-Hauls rented now, because someday it's going to be a bonanza.
So what have you enjoyed the most so far at this convention?
Obviously the moment I'm sharing with you right now.
I appreciate that, because...
Was that sincere? Did I fake that? Did I?
Well, I was believing
because I've been taking acting classes. How did it work? You know what? Do you know what I like? I like getting to see people that I like to talk to. And, of course, you're part of that. But I do, you know. To me, honestly, I could have stopped that. The first night, the night before, a group of us, went to dinner at my favorite restaurant, Uchiko. And I got to curate the menu for them, because I'm a bit of an expert on it. And we had an amazing meal, an amazing conversation. And, you know, if that's all I'd gotten from this, it would have been worthwhile.
When I have talked to you before about barbecue, and I've told you where I'm going, you're saying that place sucks, or, you know, there's better.
Yes.
So where do you recommend in Austin people should go for barbecue?
Franklin's is the legend. But the problem with Franklin's is, in addition to the cost that you pay for the barbecue, you have to pay with your life. Because it's a three-hour wait, right?
Yeah.
I mean, on the weekends, there are people that get in line at 7:38 in the morning, and the place doesn't open till 11.
Wow. Is that right? Good?
It's very good.
Yeah.
I'll give you the way to get Franklin barbecue trick in a moment. My current favorite, and when people come to town, the place I take them is Terry Black's. Not Black's, which is good. Terry Black's.
Okay.
Their beef rib is practically a religious experience. But everything they have is great. Their brisket is amazing. Their sausage is tremendous. I'm not into turkey, so I don't really have any opinion on that. But that's my favorite place currently.
Is it near downtown?
It's not far from downtown. I mean, it depends on how you draw your lines of downtown. 6th Street, no. But in what we would consider the greater downtown area.
It's kind of walking distance-ish? I mean, Austin's not all that big.
No, I mean, in 1,000-degree heat, no, nothing's walking distance in Austin. I would not walk from here. I mean, you know what? It's in walking distance depending on where you're starting.
Right. I like that. That's
now,
good.
Now, here's the real secret. There's a place that is a collaboration between the owner chef of Uchi Uchi Co, which is Tyson Cole, who, believe it or not, I used to teach magic tricks to when he was like a kid at one of my summer camps.
Yeah.
And now he's an award-winning chef. And if you're in a major city, there are now a few Uchi Uchi Co's around. It's a Japanese fusion, fish flown in directly from Japan, ingredients, preparations, imaginative, experiential. It's almost indescribable, but I do a pretty good job if I do say so. Franklin Barbecue, the two collaborated on a restaurant called Loro, which is a Japanese smokehouse. So imagine Asian-flavored barbecue. There is a chicken dish there, which is the most amazing chicken dish I've ever had in my life. As you said, I don't care for turkey. Their turkey, the best turkey I've had in my life. And you can get the Franklin ribs there on weekends after that, and you don't have to wait in line for 18 hours.
So it's the same recipe, basically.
It's got its own Loro twist, but it's that same kind of quality, amazing. But that's true of everything on the Loro
sauce,
menu.
I guess, so too, in the smoke.
You know what? I used to be a big sauce guy, and I like a good barbecue sauce. Like the Salt Lick, which is a classic Austin institution, is great because of the sauce and the glaze. Also, a singular taste. But great barbecue requires neither a knife nor a sauce. In fact, it's Black's Barbecue down in Elgin, the original. They won't give you, they refuse to give you your utensils because they don't believe it should be eaten with it. It should fall apart. Actually, back in the day at Black's, each table had a knife chained to the table. Now, they don't now because of hygienic reasons. But the knife, it was chained to the table so people didn't steal them and you couldn't fight with them. But so you could, if you're having a family meal, you could slice it off. But great barbecue. I mean, but the Terry Black beef rib, I tell you what, the brisket is great too, though. It's really tough. And the beef rib is the size of a small Volkswagen. So, I mean, one human being.
It's kind of like the Flintstones. The
Brontosaurus burger. Yeah, that kind of thing. Right.
Wow.
So
that sounds
so
magic.
We've called the magic, culinary magic. Magic in your mouth. I think that's going to be my new match. Brad Henderson, magic in your mouth. Open wide, kids.
Magic is coming.
Yeah, magic is coming. And on that note.
So you have enjoyed mainly talking with a lot of people here at the convention.
Yeah.
And you learned some things as well? Or have you bought anything in the dealer's room?
I bought a few things. I mean, you can't not buy a few things. I'm trying to sell a few things.
What are you selling?
Well, how much money you got? So I've got a scissor bucket. I bought a whole slew of scissor buckets, which is a rigged carnival game. And I brought one of those down to sell. I've got a very rare, possibly unique, Owens No Force mechanical mental epic board. And the thing, you feel like James Bond when you use it, because you hit the buttons and the panels slide and rearrange themselves on the board itself.
You don't have to rock it back and forth.
No. And I brought some Miracle Factory books because I've got all the deluxe editions, so I'm trying to clean out my regular editions so I have book space.
Do you think this is the better place because you've got a lot of collectors here as opposed to a regular magic convention?
Well, you know, the problem with selling a lot of collectible, particularly books, to groups like this is most of us already have them, mm-hmm. right? You know, we are the guys that signed up originally, or you're guys like me who have had two copies, literally had two copies of every one of those
if
books.
If I do, it's an accident.
Yeah. Well, I had the deluxe editions, and I also got the regular
editions.
Well, I've
got a few. Okay,
right?
Gotcha.
Right? Yeah. So, and I just decided, keep the deluxes, sell the regulars. You know, keep the gun, leave the cannolis. So, like, I've got the Andy Nyman Bulletproof book, which is very hard to find. And in addition to a few others, I've got the two-volume David P. Abbott House of Mysteries book, which is I mean, those copies are selling for crazy money. And it was written by Teller, written and edited by Teller. And, of course, the story of David P. Abbott is fabulous, too.
Yeah. Wow. Well, it sounds
and I've got a whole storage unit. So if you're ever in Pfluger Rock and you just want to go through and look at a bunch of old stuff that I've picked up and make me a decent offer, speaking of which, let's pitch this. I don't know if you're going to be there, but in May, I think it's the first Saturday in May, is it? We're having the Austin Ring 60 annual picnic, which used to be on Father's Day, but we're moving it a month early because Father's Day, it's hotter than Hades. We're also doing a ring installation banquet there, but one thing we're doing is we're having a bit of a swap meet. So anybody who wants can bring a table, fill it up with stuff, and the only cost for participating in the swap meet is you have to bring at least one decent item to donate for a raffle.
Gotcha.
So if you're in the Texas area, and I'm going to try to talk and make it seem like I'm... You talk as I pull up the date.
I have participated in that on a few occasions, and I know they have contests also, speaking of food, where they've had pie contests or cookies and whatever as well. And
yes.
Then they have performances.
And we have the one-trick contest.
It's an one-trick contest. And
May 1st. It is the first Sunday.
And usually, again, it's a picnic outdoors.
Yes.
And it's kind of moved around to different places.
This year it's going to be at Trixie Bonds' houses again.
Okay, well, we did it there last year.
Yes, and it was great. And I said I wanted to do it there because, you know, while communing and socializing with our friends and compeers is always wonderful, it's more wonderful if we're in a place that is lovely.
Yeah.
And for many years, we had it at the Brooks Griffith compound on
nice
Lake Austin.
Yeah.
It was great. You know, it just, we did that for a number of years, and you know, it was time to move on and you know, save their yard and the backbreaking efforts that go with that. And we're very grateful to the Griffith family for allowing us to do that for all these years. And Trixie volunteered last year, and she's got this beautiful house. And as you know, she's the hostess with the mostess. It was, you know, the food was the best we've ever had at any banquet, you know, thing. And that's all her. And, you know, she's got a lovely home, and she's, you know, super. And we do have a dessert contest, so you know it'll be your chance to win award-winning desserts.
Right.
The dessert you have may not have won the award when you eat it, but it will have, you know, one of them will at least win afterwards. And then we're going to do a one-trick contest, and this is not where you bring in the lazy hooker. This is we'll pause for effect there. I will be emceeing that again this year. And every, you know, once the participant gets up and does a trick, and then we have a jury, and, you know.
I did that last year, and yeah. I think Bertle actually won last year, I believe.
Did he win? I honestly don't remember who won.
Okay.
All I remember is I didn't get to see your act. I introduced you, and then something came up, as they do when you're, you know, emceeing or stage managing
right.
a show.
Right.
It was like, oh, something's wrong, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to watch this, and I'm going to fix this, and I'm going to watch this.
But that is a fun event.
See you, and right. I feel very, very, you know.
Well, that's fine.
Right.
I'll perform it for you again privately, just to show you. It was
is that
a trick.
Promise?
It's a threat.
Okay, good job.
Well, listen, I thank you very much for the time, and they're getting ready, I know, to close the bar over here.
That's not going to kick us out. That's not going to stop us.
No. Yeah,
I think somebody brought a tub and some rubbing alcohol, and we're starting to ferment over here.
I'm glad you came to this event.
I'm just breathing hard.
It has been nothing short of fun.
Can we use this material? Is there like a
probably
late night?
Not.
Right. Oh, that's a shame. This is some of my best work.
It really is, actually.
Thank you.
Which is a sad thing.
I know, right?
But you got that Eugene look going, you know, Eugene Berger now.
The malevolent Santa Claus.
Yes.
I can channel Eugene.
Yes, okay.
I used to do that at the Mystery School Fires. I would do Eugene reciting the Brady Bunch theme song.
Can you do that now, or is it...
Give me a moment to get into character.
Okay. Here we go.
Here's a story of a lovely lady who was bringing up three girls on her own. You can't see the look, but no, I sold it with the look. I really sold it.
You sold it.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Almost as if he's here. It's scary. I'm getting goosebumps.
I know, right?
Brad, thanks very much.
Anytime.
I appreciate it. It's always good seeing you.
All right. Well, where are the girls? Where did we put the girls?
With Magic Word Podcast, we're going to go hit the hay and push this podcast. Thanks. That was Brad Henderson. This is Scotty out. And good night.